The spring pledge drive is officially over, but it continues here in the WYXR archive. All April, we ask you, the archive listener, to go to WYXR.org/donate and contribute today to keep this archive going.
That makes her want another man. Even though she makes me feel unnecessary.
Thank you. howdy, friends. You listen to Burn Ends on WYXR 91.7 FM Memphis. Burn Ends here. Special show tonight. Jimmy McDonough, king of the crazy biographers, going to be calling in here in a bit, and we're going to have a chat about his new book about Gary Stort. We just heard Gary do Single Again and Drinking Thing. Oh, look. Hollywood Bob Muir just walked in, handed me a cold beer. I tell you what. Cheers, pal. It's turned into a party, and we don't even got the main attraction on the line yet. Robbie Grant hanging out. All right, how about we keep the Gary Stort adjacent music going? And up next, we got D.F. McIver and the Starbusters doing Sweet Tater and Cisco, one co-written by Gary Stort. Keep it tuned right here.
Over yonder, seen people dressed in white. I know it was. had to get drunk last night. I couldn't lay down without a fight. I had to get drunk last night when I should have been on. When I'm drinking, I don't know. go this far. I don't think I can get off from where we are. Some time to waste, so just a taste was all that I had planned. And I never intended for it to get so.
That was Gary Stewart, 10 years of this. Hey, Jimmy, can you hear me?
I sure can. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Jimmy, I can hear you loud and clear. How you doing, man?
All right. I'm just dandy. We had a little technical kerfluffle, but now it's all been ironed out.
Well, that's how it often works.
Who's that degenerate? Who's that degenerate in the background? You didn't loan him money, I hope.
That's why he's here.
I'll never get it back.
That's why he's here. The knees. I'm going for the knees first, Jimmy.
Very good. Very good.
So, yeah, this is a pleasant surprise that our mutual pal, Hollywood Bob Meir, just happens to be here.
Yes, a fabulous cat. It's great to see his face.
Yes, and he actually, you know, showed up with a six-pack of Colorado Kool-Aids instead of empty-handed for once. It was a pleasant surprise.
Well, then, let the party begin.
Yeah, the party is now started officially. So, right. So Jimmy McDonough here, for people listening here, is the... Yeah. The king of the crazy biographers, and he's written a lot of great books about some film names and some music names, but today we're mostly here to talk about your new book about Gary Stewart. I've read it, I loved it, and I can't wait to talk about it.
Lay it on me.
All right, man. Well, I guess the first thing I thought about after reading that book was there's two real takeaways that I had after reading. The first was that it was basically, it was almost like a love story. It was a dark one, but it really was a tender love story with a a sad ending, but a really nice love story.
Correct.
I know that's really not a question. It's just more of a prompt, I suppose.
I agree with that, Mr. Plumley.
All right. So
it's also a love story between Gary and I.
Yes.
Rather PG. We never get in the bathtub together, but there's that element as well.
It was. You know, you guys were almost like two kindred spirits, if you think about it. I mean, he liked old movies. I know you like your movies. He liked old records. Mm. Both you guys seem to be motivated in your careers by things other than just folding money. So you guys must have had a lot in common.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. He knew I really loved his music and that it wasn't phony baloney, and he related that and forgave me a lot of youthful indiscretions.
Well, if you know, this is an interesting book because you actually got to know Gary and spent a lot of time with him, and a lot of biographers write about subjects who they either rarely meet or, you know, never get to meet at all, whether it's because they're just inaccessible or they died 100 years ago or whatever. But you spent a lot of time with Gary, right?
Yeah, that's how I do things. I like to, if possible, if the people are ambulatory, I just like to hang out with them until they can't take it anymore.
Was there ever any subject you got to hang out with more than Gary Stewart? Because it seems like I got the impression you spent a good amount of time with him down in Florida.
Oh, yeah. This guy, Andy Milligan, that I wrote this book, The Ghastly One, hung out with him a lot more. I was in his last movie. I doubled for the Frankenstein monster. I wiped his tushy when he was dying, which not many biographers get that thrill. So it just happens to be my MO, you know. I like to get in the thick of it, for better or for worse.
Yeah, well, with the Gary book, at least, it feels like it was for better. I mean, the other takeaway I had was he just seemed like a really likable, good guy.
Hey, man, everybody I talked to loved this guy. Even when they wanted to strangle him, they loved him. He was just, he was beyond. He was so kind. He was hilarious. He was a genius talent. He had a way of making you forgive some rather hellacious behavior. It was just the way he was. I've never had a book that describes more bloodshed and carnage, yet everyone is utterly sympathetic to Gary.
Yeah, that's right. So another interesting thing about the book to me is that, you know, Gary being a country guy, I feel like country music is often so Nashville-centric or Texan, and Gary's down there in Florida. I mean, born in Kentucky, but in Florida, and he just Fort Pierce really just plays, and Florida just plays a huge part in this book. And really, Gary's whole look and vibe just doesn't seem like it's at home anywhere really other than Florida.
Well, certainly Nashville felt that way. You know, he was the perfect storm. You know, he grew up in Kentucky. His mother sang. He was familiar with that high, lonesome Kentucky sound, all the early rock and roll cats. And then when he got to Florida, well, actually, while he was still in Nashville, heard the Allman Brothers, walked into Jerry Bradley's office and said, you know, stick it, I quit. I want to go make my kind of music. And the amazing thing about the guy was he's the only guy I met. I mean, I don't know about you, Eric, but a lot of these guys who claim to be country rock, it's really just rock with a spritz of country. so you don't have to hold your nose at all that down home stuff. Gary was 1,000% country. He could do bluegrass like nobody's business. He could play rock and roll. He could play rockabilly. He could play blues. I heard him do it. I believed it all. Very unusual.
Speaking of hearing him do it, there's a part in the story that I wanted to ask you about since we're sitting here in Memphis. Mm. If I remember the year correctly, it was 87, and you and Gary and some other folks spent a night in a hotel in Memphis that, as described in your book, really did sound pretty magical.
Oh, yeah. It was a motel, a cheap one, which added to the je ne sais quoi. And Gary took us on a tour of Graceland because Mary Lou had never been there. So to hear Gary pontificate about Elvis, priceless. They had gotten in a fight on the drive down, and on the interstate, Mary Lou had pulled the key out of the ignition, which must have been exciting for the two of them. And we reconvened later at a motel that night, and Gary had this guitar, and it was missing strings. Excuse me, got a bit of a cold since coming off the road. It was missing strings. It wasn't tuned well. And he, as I remember, he was missing a tooth. He was looking a little jittery.
Jittery.
But he looked at my recorder, which he often did, and took it as a challenge. He went and stood over in the corner of this motel, and he just ripped through song after song. I'm talking about "Hand Me Another" by Mickey Newberry, "Waiting on a Southern Train," John Sparling, some Elvis songs in honor of our trip to Graceland, and it was just, Eric, it was just boom, 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 like a medley, you know, on a train. And you know, I'm not one much for medleys, but this was like otherworldly. And I remember he finally just stopped, did not turn around, and we were all like just sitting there stunned, you know? And that was typical Gary, you know? He wanted to leave something on the recorder for posterity, and did he ever.
Amazing. Do you remember the hotel?
Hell no. If I remembered the motel, the name would have been in the book, knowing an anal retentive like myself.
Okay.
I know it was crappy. That's all I know.
Yeah. I feel like that was exactly what it needed to be, though. Speaking of like Gary and the recorder, when might people be able to hear some of the stuff that he recorded that was never released? Any idea?
Well, we're working on that. You know how it is these days. You know, the Harry Bray box set is not imminent, Eric, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
And same goes for Gary Stewart. These big conglomerates couldn't care less, so it's a challenge. There is an album of the early stuff along with some hair-raising demos. I hear it's coming out in a month. Don't hold me to that prediction. Vegas odds are 50-50. But it has a lot of the early demos that he did before he was a star. And then the hair-raising version of Williamson County that I talk about in the book will be on there, and some other things. So that's a start. I definitely want all of it to come out.
Me too. Fingers crossed. I certainly hope it does.
Yeah.
So when I think of Gary Stewart, and even before I read the book, it just, there's certain things about him that have always confounded me. It seems like he's a career full of what ifs. And like the first one that I could think of, I almost wonder if he, in my mind, he was like 10 years too late. I feel like he would have, if he was cutting his first records in the 60s and then sort of had his second act in the 70s when the, you know, so-called outlaw country was all the rage, instead of putting out those records, those great records in the mid-70s when he first started putting them out, I just wonder if he would have been bigger, and I realize that's not necessarily what he wanted, but like if he would have been bigger and just had a more successful career.
Well, certainly possible. I mean, I think for me, the key would be if he was not on RCA. Had he been on a label like Capricorn, where they would have let him run amok a bit, I think he would have stuck around. But RCA just wanted one thing only, and that was drinking thing number 47.
Yep.
Gary was really good at doing something the first time. Then he got bored, you know, and there's only so many songs of the caliber of drinking thing. And it proved to be an untenable situation in the end for Gary and for RCA.
Yeah, scrappier label. I think in your book you mentioned Bearsville and Shelter, but like a scrappier label may have suited him better. And honestly, like the RCA art department did not do his record covers any favors. Like they're endearing, and now that I love, you know, I do,
yeah, right.
I've
yeah,
grown
right
to love them, but they don't make great first impressions.
Yeah, he looks like an errant member of a barbershop quartet on that first one, you know.
Yeah,
someone your grandma could love. And Gary was someone your grandma could love, but he was also someone who might set fire to your barn.
Yeah, I think
and RCA never conveyed that. You know, people would talk to me and say, Gary Stewart, an outlaw? You got to be kidding me. Yeah, come to Florida and hang out with the Stewarts. You'll change your mind. But that was the reality of him, and it was never conveyed by RCA. I mean, I don't mean to be dogging RCA. Roy Day, the producer there, they made great records together. They had a run of about four albums, smoking hot stuff. But in the overall picture, there was so much more to Gary that he never got to do, although he did it in fits and starts and tapes all over the place that he left behind.
So one guy I didn't expect to ask you about when I was thinking about talking to you today, Jimmy, was David Allan Coe. But seeing how he just died, I thought, well, maybe I'll bring him up. There's a couple good stories in the book, but I think maybe you could share one of them, but I just wanted to say that your description of him, which I wrote down, as an unhinged cosmic blowhard genius, I laughed when I read it, I remembered it, and it's funny as can be, and it's probably the best description of David Allan Coe I've ever read. Can you share one of the Coe stories, since, you know, we should pay a little tribute to him?
Yeah, this is a conundrum for me, because Gary never mentioned him, and I never mentioned him to Gary, and somebody was asking me today, what things, if Gary suddenly appeared in your living room, what things would you ask him now? And that was one of them. I'd love to get Gary's take on what actually occurred and if they wrote any songs. But at one point, he and Dean Dillon and David Allan Coe waltzed into Billy Sherrill's studio with a song they'd written together, cut it with a vocal by Gary, and Warren Haynes played on it, and because of label hoo-ha, that never came out. I mean, I'd like to hear that number myself, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And it's languishing in a vault, I guess, at Columbia somewhere.
Is that the...
And I just hope, you know, the interest in this book will unlodge a few of these things. We'll see.
I mean, the title of that song alone has me highly intrigued. If it's the one, if you're talking about that song that you write about in the Gary book, it's like Lover's Graveyard or Graveyard for Lovers.
Right. Yeah, it has all the ingredients to be great or utterly terrible. Either way, I'd sure love to hear it.
Same. Well, let's see. What else? You've been doing a lot of publicity for the book, I see, and I noticed you called your book tour the Ain't No Grave Tour. Can you explain that?
Yeah, sure. Ain't No Grave Gonna Hold My Body Down, of course, is a great record by Brother Claude Ely that came out on King Records It was one of Gary's favorite records as a youth. And I remember being in the trailer, and I got to tell you, Eric, it was unbelievable. I'd be sitting there, you know, with my little tape recorder, trying to pay attention, and Gary would just come winding around like a shark with that guitar. It was almost like, you know, he might bash me in the head with it. It was so aggressive. And he'd do things like "Ain't No," we talk about "Ain't No Grave," and then he'd just leap into the song. And I mean, right in my face. And it's hard to convey the excitement I even feel talking about it, because it was just great. And it just seemed like that was the right name for this particular tour. And it's been a barrel of monkeys, I got to tell you. Yeah. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, I played the 45 before you called in. It's one of my all-time right. favorites, and I was tickled when I saw that you were calling your book tour the Ain't No Grave Tour. Well, anything else you want to say about Gary? I mean, I know you've been asked a lot of questions in the last couple of weeks, but certainly someone's has failed to ask you something that you really wanted to get off your chest now.
Well, I would just say that even if you're not a country music fan, this is a great story. It's the story of the Stewarts, a family that came from Kentucky, ended up in Florida, got into some very hair-raising activities, and it was the background for Gary's career. And I just... it took me, you know, I first wrote about Gary for the Village Voice, and then I just couldn't crack how I was going to do it as a book. And then I realized, you know, I just love all these people in the Stewart's orbit. Just let them talk and get out of their way. So the book is punctuated with these oral history chapters, and I really think it makes it work the way I wanted it to anyway.
I thought it worked, and I've given you the same compliment that I've given Tasha's about Dino, is that regardless of whether you're interested in the subject of your work, your biographies, they are absolutely worth reading, even if you had never heard of Gary Stewart or don't have any interest in country music, because the book itself is just phenomenal.
Well, thank you, pal, but I have some questions for you.
All right, lay them on me.
I got to tell you, I was very excited to come on to this thing because, you know, in my younger days, I used to be quite the record hound. I remember driving cross country with my pal Charlie Beasley just to look for Frankie Miller records. That's all we were doing.
I love Frankie Miller.
I'm not talking about the Irish cat. I'm talking about the Texas honky tonk singer of great renown.
Amazing records on Star Day.
You better believe it, son. And so those days are all behind me. But when I open my little computer and look on Instagram, I'm always interested in what you find. And now that I'm an old semi-ambulatory grandpa, you provide the thrill that I no longer have it in me to go out to the, you know, the thrift stores and dig through the boxes. But I feel like I can recapture that those days of my mad youth. You show pictures of the label. You play parts of the record. You show what you eat on the trips. I completely dig it.
Sandwiches and records, Jimmy.
Yeah. So for all you geezers out there who are in the home like myself, check out Do the 45 on Instagram because... you can experience, this is great therapy. It's great therapy for us codgers because Eric is still out there doing the Lord's work and will turn you on to great records like, and I hope you play this somewhere in here, Harry Bray and the Wheels, the Gabriel record. This is one of my all-time favorite records. You'll never hear anything quite like it. And this is the cat who turned me on to it. So hallelujah to you.
Jimmy, I did bring it just for you because even though this is the first time we've ever talked in real life, you know, we have messaged each other from time to time over the recent years about and bonded over records. So I tried to bring a few that I thought you might like, and I did bring the Harry Bray and the Wheels record, and I most certainly will play it. And I really appreciate the kind words. Yeah, I mean, what is more, there's very few things I get more romantic about than old 45s and hearing stuff that I don't know. Every time I go into, you know, a record shop, someone always says, what are you looking for? I'm always like, something that I don't know, because I'm looking for stuff I have no idea what it is. And when I see it, when I hear it, hopefully I'll get excited. That's what I'm looking for.
Well, you convey that, my friend, and I thank you for keeping the spark alive.
Well,
you might want to wake Mayor up back there. I think he's fallen asleep looking at porn on his phone. Get the male nurse ready.
Yeah, come on, Mayor. What do you got? You got to have a retort for this.
There you go, right there.
I got nothing for Jimmy, but I'm going to give you a ring and we'll catch up. I wanted to let you recuperate from your road work, you know.
All right, what the hell is he doing there? Is he your towel boy, Eric?
He's just beer caddy. I serve him beers. He snaps, and then the Coors appears in his hand. You know,
yeah.
Very good.
He shows up from time to time. We never know when he's going to appear, but when he does, we're happy to see him. And I'm certainly happy to see you. And hey, congratulations on an amazing book. It may be your last, it may not be. I hope it's not, but if it is you went out on top. It's fantastic. Read Jimmy McDonough's Gary Stort book and any of his other books. I would not steer you wrong.
Well, thank you, sir. I do have one music book left in me, not a biography, and that's the autobiography of Jack Nietzsche, a name I'm sure you know. So he put his life on tape for me. I got like 100 hours, and hopefully I'll manage to get away with that one.
I hope it comes out. I hope to get to read it. He's a fascinating figure who has his prints all over a lot of good records. So, hey, Jimmy, thanks again. And I also feel like we should say happy belated birthday to Shannon.
Hey, that's a great thing. Yeah, Shannon Stewart, Shannon Ashburn, Gary's daughter, is a big part of this book. And, you know, this was not, I'll leave you with this tale, even though I've told it elsewhere. You know, I gave her the first copy of the book when it was physical, and it was kind of heavy, you know. We've been doing this for many decades now. And, she said, well, okay, I'll read it. It's the first whole book I've ever read, which I thought was a great way to set the stage. And after a week of questions that were incredibly intense to answer, she called and she said, okay, Jimmy, I finished the book, and I just want you to know, I love you anyway. I think that's the best review I will ever get, Mr. Plumlee, and I thank you for having me on the show.
Can't beat it, Jimmy. Thanks. Take care, man. Here is right. Harry Bray and the Wheels, Jimmy McDonough's request.
Oh, yeah.
Time to look at her before, and baby, I don't see. I'd like to think it makes me proud, but I'm only fooling me. I know she'll be looking back the minute I'm not there, while she pours herself on some stranger, I pour myself a drink somewhere. She's acting single, I'm drinking double. I had my drown my troubles. My heart is breaking like the tiny bubbles. She's acting single, I'm drinking doubles. I know what she plans to do, but I don't know where are we. If I ask who that stranger was, she'll just say an old friend. I'm not weak, I tell myself, I stay because I'm strong. The truth is I'm not man enough to stop her from doing me wrong.
Walks the streets in silence
till the early morning light. Daytime never sees her, she's the lady of the night. Some say that her profession is a low-down, dirty shame. Some folks say she's just some hippie chick that's half insane. She talked to me about someone she called son of man. She told me things I wasn't quite prepared to understand. Perhaps she was a vision of delirium I seen. This prostitute I met last night named Mary Magdalene. Told a friend about the strange experience I had with benzedrine indifference. He assured me I was mad. His dad had been a preacher, quoted scriptures from his head. Disbelief was on his face, especially when I said she talked to me about someone she called son of man. She told me things I wasn't quite prepared to understand. Perhaps she was a vision of delirium I seen. This prostitute I met last night named Mary Magdalene. With hepatitis eyelids, I went tripping down the street. The local Catholic mission offered rest for weary feet. The priest heard my confession while his breath smelled just like wine. He gave me the impression I was wasting sacred time. He talked to me about someone he called the Son of Man. He told me things I wasn't quite prepared to understand. He talked to me of visions and things he'd seen in dreams. And he talked about a prostitute named Mary Magdalene. He talked to me about someone he called the Son of Man. He told me things I wasn't quite prepared to understand. Perhaps it was a vision of delirium I seen. That prostitute I met last night called Mary Magdalene.
I see the sparkling little diamond on your hand. It's plain to see that you've already got a man. And I can tell you're not about to fall for any of my lies. I see the want to in your eyes. Deep in your smile there's a quiet, soft desire. Like the embers of a once raging fire. And you know I could light that fire again. But you know it's not wise. I see the one to strong enough to hold when a love has grown cold in a woman wants a love that's warm. How many women just like you have silent schemes? How many men they sleep with in their dreams? You can stay or you can go, but I can't sympathize. I see the want to in your eyes. I see the want to.
That just about does it, folks. See you again next week. And thanks to Robbie for the technical help. Thanks to Bob for hanging out. And, of course, big thanks to Jimmy McDonough for calling and talking to us about Gary Stort. And, again, thanks to Mike Brown for covering for me last week. Close it out with one more Gary Stort. See you.
Hi, this is Mike Smith from Memphis.